TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
This is my spot.
All the time. A division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, well, let me tell you, we're triple chopping, y'all. We're going to bring you up to speed.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at www.tsn1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim is away today. We have the substandard producer Remus on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. He's shaking his head. It's good. You're in for a day today, Reem. Let me tell you about that.
It was nice of you, Remus, to get the headphones all ready to roll.
I was busy reading up about MMA for the weigh-in.
You were just texting.
I know. I was.
Were you texting about MMA for the weigh-in?
No.
By the way, Michael, can I get some headphones here? I'm looking around the studio here for some headphones. Welcome back, folks. But
yeah, you guys miss a week. You go to New York for a week, and all of a sudden they've cut your headphones. Ezzy doesn't get a chair for a while. Off to a hell of a start on this Saturday afternoon. 3 hours of hockey talk ahead for you till 3 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time, the general manager of the Dallas Stars, Jim Nill, is going to join us. 1 p.m. from the National Post, our good friend Michael Trakos, to talk about the moves that the Toronto Maple Leafs made during the start of NHL free agency. Ezzy, congratulations on your 7-year contract with the Maple Leafs.
I'm just happy that I have headphones right now.
It's a 7-year contract with headphones is what you get there. Anyways, we will go all the way throughout all of the signings that were done in the NHL yesterday. Really, to put it this way, if you're a NHL free agent and you didn't get signed yesterday,
yeah,
you know, there's some holes in your game. There are some holes in your game. And we can start off by informing the audience that Mike Santarelli, he was a Winnipeg Jets unrestricted free agent. He's now an ex-Winnipeg Jet. He signed this morning with Vancouver. Richie, you say he is from
yeah,
Vancouver?
Yeah, he's a BC boy.
Yeah, so Mike Santarelli signs this morning with the Vancouver Canucks, so you can take him off the list of potential returnees to the Winnipeg Jets. We start with the trade that was made last night, shortly after 6 p.m. local time. The Winnipeg Jets sent a second-round pick in 2014 to the Minnesota Wild, their division rival Minnesota Wild, mm-hmm, in exchange for Devin Setoguchi. Before I ask you, well, you know, your thoughts on the deal, is Devin Setoguchi the answer to your second-line right-wing problem?
Likely it's going to be, Drew, talent-wise. I guess when you're looking at possible line combinations, I'm not sure a guy who's got a pretty good shot and is more of a shooter than a playmaker like Setoguchi lines up well with Kane and Jokinen, all three of which are shooters and not passers. So if you want to think of it in terms of second line talent for right wing, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Frolik might be actually the better fit if you're going to put Jokinen and Kane together, which I think would be a stupid move anyways. I thought it was a stupid move last year to do because Jokinen and Kane have no chemistry. Now, if you look at it in terms of, line combination-wise, Scheifele with Setoguchi and Kane, then it's a different story because Setoguchi and Kane are both good skaters. I want to quickly talk about Setoguchi's talent level and what he brings to the table, and then we can kind of talk about the trade itself. Setoguchi, guys, isn't the biggest guy. He's under 6 feet. He's not the most physical player. He's a very good skater. He's got a really good shot. And I think those are his two biggest strengths. He can score goals. He's not a great playmaker. He's not going to be the passer to create offense that way. He's going to find the open spot. He's going to hit it in the slot or wherever down the wing. He's got a good shot, wrist shot, good slap shot, and he can move around. So that's the strength of Devin Setoguchi's game. Is he a game breaker? No, he's not a game breaker. Is he an upgrade over what the Jets have now? Unquestionably, he's an upgrade over what the Jets have now. But, you know, I think the question needs to be asked in terms of, you know, what we should point out the fact that he's a pending UFA after this upcoming season.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the question has to be asked in terms of the second round pick is, you know, what does Devin Setoguchi do for your hockey club in the big picture? What does he make you that you weren't?
Richie, I have to believe, and it's funny, you know, everyone sat around, Richie, you were on with Rick Ralph and Gary Lawless and Brian Munns at the MTS Center during trade deadline day.
Pardon me, hold on.
Yeah, it wasn't trade deadline
day. Free agency day. There were so many signings and so much money flying around that I don't even know what time of year it is. I'm just happy Remus got me headphones, to be honest with you.
You don't need headphones, man. They're right beside you. You can hear them talk.
Remus, can you turn off your microphone?
Love Remus. He's the best. Remus is actually on the station more than anybody right now.
Oh, yeah. He has a bunk bed.
Let's continue here, though.
I mean, Rick Ralph.
Everybody was waiting around for the Jets to do something, and I know a lot of the national media was, you know, wondering if Chevy was picking up the phone and all this, and I thought it was pretty ridiculous, but the Jets go out and acquire Devin Setoguchi, and everybody was already talking about how next season around the trade deadline, Setoguchi could possibly be trade bait. Now, I don't think they've acquired him for that reason. Richie mentioned the second-round pick that was given up to acquire Setoguchi. He's going to be a UFA next year, Drew. You just mentioned it. And if they like what they see, I tweeted this out yesterday. He's a guy that they could possibly sign to a 3 or 4 year deal. He's 26 years old. He's not a guy by any means that they don't know what he's all about. The guy's got 320 goal seasons. And sure, last year it didn't quite work out with him for the Wild. But this is a guy that Chevy inquired about before yesterday. And I think this is exactly what they need. I mean, the Jets need scoring on the wings.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
First and foremost, the number one need for the Jets moving forward, if they're going to be a contender, is a number one line center. We've talked about that. Brian Little works very well with Andrew Ladd and Blake Wheeler, and that is the Jets' number one line right now. But going forward, if they're going to be a contender with all of these teams that have loaded up, if they're going to compete with the Columbuses and the Chicagos and the St. Louises in the Western Conference.
Columbus is in the East.
Well, I forgot about
Nashville.
Dallas, yeah.
Then they're going to need a number one line center, but they've improved the second line right wing and third line right wing mm-hmm. spots. And Setoguchi is a natural scorer. He's not a two-way player. He's a scorer, and they've addressed that, and I like the move. They gave up a second-round pick, and, you know, no problem with it.
I mean, you know, I think we should point out, I want to point out both sides of everything. When you look at it in terms of the Jets' perspective, you've gotten Frolik, mm-hmm. and you've also acquired Devin Setoguchi. You've given up two second-round picks in the process. Your system is improving. It's not stacked by any means. You're also getting two right-wingers from the division. So, are the teams in Minnesota and Chicago worried about Setoguchi or Frolik coming back to hurt them is a question that needs to be asked. Now, I don't think the Jets are a team that concerns them. But, I mean, that's something that needs to be taken into consideration here, too. Setoguchi, he makes your team better. Now, one thing to point out about Setoguchi is he can score. I think he had 13 goals last year playing primarily with Matt Cullen. I think it needs to be pointed out that prior to last year with Matt Cullen, which I think was a good indicator because Cullen isn't necessarily a playmaker as much as he's a kind of a shooter.
He had 13 goals and 14 assists this past year.
Right. But I think we need to point out who Devin Setoguchi played with for the previous 4 to 5 seasons.
In San Jose primarily.
Well, the Minnesota, before last year, he played in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
He was part of the Brent Burns deal as he was there at the draft in Minnesota when that happened, right?
Yeah,
that's correct. Yep.
He played when he came to Minnesota. He played with Mikko Koivu. Mikko Koivu is one of the best playmakers in the National Hockey League, okay? Prior to that, he played primarily in the 3 seasons prior with Joe Thornton and a little bit with Joe Pavelski. Joe Thornton and Mikko Koivu were probably Joe Thornton's one of the top 5 passers in the National Hockey League and has been for the past 10 years. Mikko Koivu was probably in the top 15 passers in the National Hockey League. He's a very good playmaker. He's a smart player. So his production last year with a guy like Matt Cullen is encouraging because he didn't play a ton of time and he didn't necessarily play with a playmaker. But you have to take into account the fact that the Jets have nobody on their team who is remotely close to Mikko Koivu or remotely close to Joe Thornton. So is he the product of playing with tremendously talented playmakers? And if so, does that provide a concern because this team doesn't have anything close to a tremendously creative playmaker?
They don't currently have that guy, but the strength, and I mean, people are expecting big things from Mark Scheifele, whether or not that's fair or not, but the strength of Mark Scheifele is primarily, you know, to a great degree, in his playmaking abilities and in his ability to set people up in scoring opportunities.
I agree with that. The question is, does Scheifele come along quick enough to have the same, to be able to play alongside of Setoguchi, or does Scheifele spend some time in the minors, come up, Setoguchi's out of town?
And that's a very good question, and we won't know that until the season starts. But, I mean, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, and everything breaks, you know, properly in this coming year, you're hoping to see a second line with Kane on your left side, Shifley up the middle, and Setoguchi on the right side, and Shifley really being responsible for setting Kane and Setoguchi up all season long, if everything breaks out in an ideal fashion.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, Drew, because then Jokinen could slide in with a guy like Frolik, who can be a little more of a playmaker, can score too, doesn't have the best shot. We'll talk about Frolik in a second. So, I mean, that's the way that possibly the lines will break.
If you look at...
Let me ask you this, Ezzy, though, before. Do the acquisitions of Frolik and Setoguchi make this team a playoff team?
It's a good question. I definitely think that these two right wingers are better than what we had last year.
But that's not the question, and I agree with that. But do you think these two acquisitions make this team a playoff team?
Given what Dallas and Nashville have done? Given what Dallas and Nashville have done, because those are the teams you were primarily thinking you were going to battle with for that final playoff spot in whatever division they eventually call this.
They didn't make the playoffs last
year. Midwest division, whatever. Probably not, because Dallas and Nashville have improved to a greater degree than the Jets have.
You still look at Nashville, though. And, you know, Seth Jones is probably going to play next year.
Yeah.
Philip Forsberg is probably going to play this year. Mm-hmm. And you look at the moves that they made, and I actually like the moves they've made. Matt Hendricks, and, you know, they went out and they got basically four gritty players. Mm-hmm. Erik Nyström and, well, Stahlberg is more of an offensive player, but they went out there and they got grit. And guys that Cullen, who you mentioned as well, signed with the Nashville Predators. So you've got Cullen might be the second-line center behind Fisher. He might be the first-line center. Mm-hmm. You got Legwon there, too. But still, Nashville isn't exactly a team that I would say is a lock to make the playoffs.
Absolutely.
But I agree with you, Drew. You're talking Dallas has gotten better. And Nashville, you could argue, has gotten better just because of the draft picks that they made this year. Mm-hmm. And then they have Forsberg coming in.
And pencil Seth Jones into that lineup as well.
You know, this is a bit of a cop-out answer, but I do believe that the Jets have improved through this draft, even though that's long-term. But I do think they've solidified that right wing spot, and I've talked about this and I've tweeted about this a lot, and we've talked about this on the show probably for a year now. Maybe not a year, but quite a long time. The Jets also need to fill that left side, left shooting, top four defenseman role. I don't think Grant Clitsam fits that role. I know we're going to get into the Grant Clitsam contract after, but until they address that, I would probably say that the Jets are still a team that's going to be in tough to make the playoffs. So, no, I don't think acquiring Frolik and Setoguchi necessarily makes them a playoff team, but I think they're a better team from where they were last year. Because you look at Miettinen is gone.
Yeah.
Wellwood is gone. Antropov is gone. All those guys were on that right-wing side.
Conference is harder. Division is harder.
Yeah.
Those are going to be factors, too. And then the reason I asked that, Ezzy, is because then if that's the case, then why give up 2 second-round picks to not make the playoffs when you could not get second-round picks and not make the playoffs?
Well,
that's the question that needs to be asked, because the players they're acquiring are not long-term. So if you...
They don't know that.
Well, we don't think they're long-term.
Oh, I don't know about that. I asked this question to Kevin Cheveldayoff yesterday in the conference call.
I'm not saying they're not long-term, meaning that they can't be long-term. I mean, their contractual obligation is not long-term. So it's not like you're trading for a guy who's signed long-term. That doesn't mean I don't think they will sign these guys, Drew. It's very possible they'll sign these guys. You have to see what happens. You also have to, it's a double-edged sword, right? I mean, these guys have to be willing to sign. They may come to Winnipeg and say, hey, this is a great opportunity for me, Michael Frolik, and for me, Devin Setoguchi. Devin Setoguchi was playing in Minnesota on the third line right wing behind Charlie Coyle and Jason Palmaville at the end of the season, okay? He's saying, okay, good. I get to go back up to be a top six forward, likely, in Winnipeg in a contract year. I may like it in Winnipeg a lot. I also may score 25 or 30 goals and get a big contract elsewhere. So the reason you give up a second-round pick for these guys is because they only have 1 year left in their deal.
If you're saying that if they had a longer contract, if they were under a 3-year contract right now, it would cost you a lot more than a second-round pick, or in the case of Frolik, you know, the third and the fifth or whatever.
Well, Frolik was the second, too.
Okay.
Right? So, I mean, I think that's the market value for those guys. So those are just questions that need to be asked. So sure, they can re-sign Setoguchi. Sure, they can re-sign Frolik. Depends on what they have, and there's a bunch of other things. But
Frolik was a third and a fifth.
Third and a
74th and 134.
Sorry, 74th, third and fifth.
Yeah.
Do you give up? I mean, again, you're giving up these picks. I mean, I don't know. That's a question that needs to be asked. It makes you better. But to what extent?
We don't know if a year from now. I know we got to go to break really quickly, Drew. But we don't know a year from now if Frolik and Setoguchi right. re-sign in Winnipeg. But there's no reason to believe that if all goes well this year, Chevy won't want to sign these guys to 3 or 4 year deals.
And then the
but there's also, like Richie said, there's always the chance that as if a UFA and you have the chance to get more money. So there's that chance. But I would think that if Setoguchi plays well and everything works out in Winnipeg, they'll try to lock him up next summer.
The other question, of course, is if they say they don't play as well as they hope to play, and then they peddle these guys in the trade deadline time, and they end up getting a second back or a third and a fifth back.
Can they recoup their investment?
And maybe they recoup their investment, but have those guys contributed enough to take the Jets out of a bottom spot and into a tweener spot? You don't want to be... I guess the point of what I'm trying to make in this segment is you don't want to be a team that always finishes... ninth.
You don't want to be the Calgary Flames of the last 5 years.
And the Toronto Maple Leafs before last year. Same idea. So that's what you have to guard against. And based upon the fact that the Jets still have defensive problems, defensively, that six-man unit that they have, to me, cannot defend at a high level. Okay?
Well, let's talk about the defense. We'll talk about Grant Clitson. We'll talk about the backup goaltender after these commercial messages. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg are to my left, Michael Remus, producing this fine show across the table from us. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with your latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. The other moves the Winnipeg Jets made this past week, the big one would be signing Grant Clitson, who was scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent. They signed him to a 3-year, $6.2 million contract, average annual value of about $2.07, $2.08 million. Your thoughts on the Grant Clitson signing, Richard, I'll start with you.
I'm fine with it overall. You're not giving up a ton of money here, so if you're complaining about it, I mean, you're not talking about too much of an overpay. You're not paying a guy 7 years and all that jazz. I found Grant Clitson to be a difficult guy to analyze because we don't really know what he is, right? I mean, for periods of time, he's a seventh guy. For periods of time, he's a fourth guy. So I went through the league and I said, okay, let me figure out, you know, what do defensemen get paid on an average, on an annual basis, and on average. So I tried to use a pretty simple formula, and that was time on ice, because I think the best players are played the most. You know, I didn't differentiate between even strength and power play and penalty kill. I just took average ice time per game on each team. I ranked each team 1 through 7, excuse me, in terms of average ice time on their defensemen.
Saying there's 7 defensive spots.
Yeah, so 7 defensive spots, and then I lined up all 7 spots for each team alongside each other. I took the average salary of all number 1s, all number 2s, all number 3s, and all number 4s. And the article Remus will tweet it out on illegalcurve.com. I wanted to figure out, on a basic level, what they paid Clitson vis-a-vis other defensemen in the National Hockey League. Clitson's at about, what, 2.07 average annual cap hit. Fourth defenseman on this formula was paid 2.19 last season, and a fifth defenseman was paid 1.62. So he's being paid between a fourth and a fifth defenseman, but a little bit more towards a fourth than a fifth. He's more a fifth to me, fifth, five, six guy than he is a fourth. I don't think he's playing in the top four of this team, and I think if he is, I think this team's in trouble. No disrespect to him. I think that's in over his head, especially considering the fact that he's probably more offensively gifted, and this team has guys like Enstrom and Byfuglien who can give it back a heck of a lot more sometimes than they put it up on the board. With Bogosian and Stewart being the only real stay-home guys, and Stewart being a clear bottom two guy, and Bogosian being a clear top four guy, top two guy really on this team, and maybe across the league. So I think it was probably a tad of an overpay, but not significant enough to, you know, get you all worked up.
At no time, even if it's an overpay, at no time are you going to point to that contract and say, that's boy, right, that's a real detriment to the team. Because it's,
right,
I mean, you know, each year it's $2 million, which
right,
in the grand scheme of NHL contracts is pittance, which is mind-boggling to begin with, but that's a separate issue for another time and day. Ezzy?
I agree with Richie in that he's probably getting overpaid to be a fifth or sixth defenseman, whatever you want to call it. But what I really like here, and I know that, you know, after this contract was signed, there was a lot of, you know, conversation on our website and on our Twitter feed about, you know, is he a fourth defenseman? Can he be a top two pairing defenseman? And he showed the ability when there were injuries to Bogosian and Redmond, and he showed the ability to play 25 minutes a night at certain points. But that was because the Jets, last year it was exposed that the Jets didn't have quite the depth that maybe some of us, including myself, thought that they had, especially considering Bufflin at times struggled on defense. Enstrom was injured at parts. Bogo was injured at the beginning of the year. And what we mean by that is that when you're in the grind of an NHL season and you get into the playoffs, Grant Clitsam is more a fifth or sixth defenseman. And that's up to debate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say what I like about Grant Clitsam, and he mentioned this on the conference call, Drew, that you were on, and Chevy mentioned this too. They picked him up off of waivers, and he was a guy that played, I believe, the most he played with Columbus was 45, 50 games, and he really had his breakthrough season. For him, that was his best season, and he liked the fact that Winnipeg gave him that opportunity, so I like that. It shows that he has a commitment to Winnipeg. He likes playing here. You see him around. He likes playing in Winnipeg. I like the fact that he improved throughout the season. Sure, you're going to look at, you know, Grant Clitsam, as far as, you know, a puck-moving defenseman, he has his flaws, but he's a physical guy, he's a smaller guy, and I like that about him, and he's a hard worker. That's what I like about him. And in that sense, I like that he was signed to a three-year deal.
You look at the Jets' left side of their defense.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you, Richie, and I think as you agree also that Grant Clitsam should not be their second-pairing left-side defenseman. Goes back to the question we've been asking for a while now. How do they fill that role? We were asking you about the right side and the second line right winger and the third line right winger, and the Jets went out and made those deals.
Yep.
How do they fill that left side, number two, left side defenseman role?
I mean, it's probably not by trade at this point. It's probably by free agency. So you're bringing in a guy like Hal Gill who can specialize in killing penalties and doesn't really good skater and not a great puck mover. I mean, is that what you're defaulting to, or are you going to try and go internally?
I mean, is Hal Gill at this point a number two left side defenseman in his career?
No, he's not. He's not. But the question is, you know, what are the alternatives about who's out there? You know, guys like Scuderi and Ferentz. Ferentz went home to Edmonton. He got his 4 years. Scuderi got, I believe, 4 years as well. Both got a year longer than they probably ought to have. But that's how you got the player, right? That's how you sign him.
Mm-hmm.
No other defenseman available. I mean, what, you know, it's a weak class right now, and agents know that. So how are the Jets going to do that? Because when you're going into the division, like the Jets are going into, with Chicago and St. Louis, we've mentioned the teams, Colorado, you know, Colorado's third line is going to have Nathan McKinnon. And one of their top two lines is going to have Duchesne, and the other one's going to have Stastny. If you want Clitsam and Bufflin, for example, if you put Enstrom and Bogosian together, if you want Clitsam and Bufflin as your second-pairing defenseman against Matt Duchesne or Paul Stastny, have fun with that. Because it's going to be an ugly season.
And to Richie's point, Chevy right now is the architect of this team, and he's putting this team together. He inherited these guys from Atlanta, and now he's putting his touches on the team. I think that 2013 draft is really indicative of him putting his touch on the team. Obviously, the scouts, Marcel Como, deserve credit for that, but the Jets are going to have Jacob Trouba in the lineup next year. We're not sure that they are.
The Jets hope that they are, but if he doesn't develop when he's up against the men of the NHL... And I expect that he's going to.
Yeah, I think... Yeah.
Just let me finish my point.
Okay,
The point being that there's a good chance that Jacob Trouba ends up spending some time in the press box. So he could start the season like Dougie Hamilton.
Or the AHL,
even though, you know, we're told that the agreement was that he wasn't going to play in the AHL, but I don't know if that's in the contract. But
no.
Jacob, there's a good chance that Jacob Trouba will spend significant parts of the season not in the top six.
So because the Jets shouldn't rely on a 19-year-old guy to necessarily be a shoe-in for a top six role.
Play, Trouba comes in as he'll be the last pairing right side guy.
That's right. And when you look at the nucleus of the Jets defense with Bufflin and Bogo and Enstrom, really you only have one shutdown guy, and that's probably Bogosian. And that's why we've said on this again and again and again. It's not like Chevy doesn't know this, but you know, for example, you throw in a Braden Coburn there in the second pairing, who apparently might be available.
Whole different team if that's the case. Yeah.
You throw Braden Coburn on that team, I might think we're a playoff team.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Let's go to break. We come back. We'll come back to the Jets roster a little bit later on in the program. After these messages, we're expected to be joined by Dallas Stars general manager Jim Nill. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website with your latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the general manager of the Dallas Stars and former Winnipeg Jet, Jim Nill. Jim, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yes, thanks for having me on. How are you doing today?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
I'm good, thanks.
That's good. Jim, we have to start with the big trade splash that the Dallas Stars made in acquiring Tyler Seguin and Rich Peverly. Can you tell our audience how that acquisition came to fruition?
Well, you know, we were having our meetings and that, and you know, after you have your meetings, you're always talking to other GMs and just seeing where they're at. And Peter Shirley and I, we touched base about 6 weeks ago, and you know, just talked about different things going on with our teams, and you know, if you're ever doing something, keep us in the loop. And so we kept up the conversations, and as we got closer to the draft, once the playoffs were over, you know, he was pretty busy in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He had lots going on his plate. We've talked a little bit more, and there was a situation where we had a player, Louis Erickson, which was going to be just the right fit for his team if he had to do something. And Tyler Seguin was going to be part of that package, and you know, we continued our conversations, and you know, we added some other players to the mix, some good players on both sides, and in the end, we were able to make a good hockey deal for both teams, and that's what was good about it.
Jim, we sometimes talk about the managerial perspective on this show and on our Wednesday show. What's it like to negotiate with Peter Chiarelli?
Peter's outstanding. No, Peter was very, I know Peter well. You know, he's a very honest guy, good values and stuff, and what I enjoyed about it was we had to keep this quiet. You know, when you got a lot of players involved, today's social media world, it's not easy to keep things quiet. And we kept this as quiet as we could right till the end. And I think he appreciated that, and I appreciated it too, because it's you have to be sensitive. You know, these players are people too, and you don't want things leaking out too much. So it was good that way.
And Jim, when you go to a new organization like Dallas, is it more difficult to immediately trade some prospects because maybe you're not as familiar with them as the previous regime was, but on the other hand, maybe easier to give them up because you don't have that tie to them?
Not really. I knew these players well. You know, I've been fortunate. I've been in the amateur scouting for a long time, and you know, watching the minor league players and that. So I knew these players that I was giving away, and it wasn't easy to give them up. You know, my toughest part of the trade was, you know, we're in a situation here where we're, you know, we got to start getting better, but we're also in a little bit of a rebuilding mold. And when you start giving up two or three players that are a big part of your rebuilding, it's not easy to do. And that was my biggest fear of the trade, is I gave up some pretty good assets. I knew Louis Erickson. Doing Louis Erickson for Seguin, I was comfortable with that. You know, a lot of people don't know Louis Erickson very well, but he's a very good player. He's going to score 40, 45 goals for Boston and going to do a great job. But when I had to give up these other pieces to the trade, that was tough, because we're in a mode here where, you know, we have to start winning, but you got to be careful what you give up too, and that was the tough part.
Jim, as many of our listeners will know, you were the assistant GM in Detroit with Kenny Holland, and you know, when you first came to Dallas, was your priority to specifically make the center ice position better?
Yeah, you know, that was the one weakness. You know, when you look at, you know, when I came here, you know, I looked at their team and that, and whenever you build a team, you know, there's three bases, you have three foundations you have to have in that team. And it starts in the back end in net. You have to have a good goalie, and we have that in Kerry Lettinen. Your defense has to be solid. You know, we got a strong defense here. We added Sergei Gonchar, so that solidified that. We got some good young players, Dylan and Oleksiak coming up. So the strong foundation was there. The final piece of the puzzle, you need to be strong down the middle. And that was definitely the weakness here in Dallas. We really just kind of too deep, and more younger kids that are kind of in third, fourth line roles. And we had no number one and no number two centermen that at least are ready yet. And so that was a definite weakness. Knew it was something we had to take care of, and we were fortunate that we were able to do that before free agency started.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Dallas Stars General Manager Jim Nill. Jim, can you walk us through the franchise's decision to move Jamie Benn to the wing?
Well, Jamie Benn's a natural winger. The only reason he ended up at center ice is just because of what we talked about. There was nobody down the middle last year, and he's never played center before. And we're fortunate that Jamie is that type of player. He can really play anywhere. But his real natural position is on the wing, and that's what we're excited about. We have a right-handed shot now in Seguin and Peverly that they can feed Jamie Benn on the left side, and I think that's really going to – his game's really going to flourish because of that.
Jim, we talked about strength up the middle, and, of course, you also added Sean Horkoff via trade. Can you talk about why Sean Horkoff was an appealing option for you and why you weren't affected by the fact that he has a fairly high cap hit for his overall offensive production?
Yeah, you know, first of all, Sean Horkoff, the player. I know Sean very well, and I've been at two world championships, won two gold medals with Sean as one of our key players, and he's a consummate pro. He's a high-end character. He does everything right. He's up early in the morning working out. He's become a consummate pro, and that's something that I needed to add to this team. We have a lot of younger players. You know, that was the reason we got Sergei Gonchar. That's the reason they got Whitney here. And I wanted to add more of a veteran presence to the team. So Sean Horkoff fits that to a T. And the reason we were able to add him was because of his cap number. His cap number is 5'5". We have lots of cap room, so it wasn't going to affect us. It wasn't going to push us up too high where we couldn't afford him. And his cash value is low compared to his cap hits. So we're fortunate that way. Not a lot of teams could add a guy with a high cap number, and so it was kind of a good fit for us.
Jim, you chose not to qualify goaltender Richard Bachman and instead decided to sign Dan Ellis to a two-year deal. He was with the Carolina Hurricanes last year, of course. Were you ever close to reaching a deal with Bachman prior to your agreement to sign Ellis for 2 years?
Yeah, no, we were in touch with Richard all the way through the process, and it was just kind of time to make a change. Richard's been here for a couple years, and he's a high-end character kid. We love Richard, but it was just kind of time. I needed somebody that, in case of injury, could play a few more games than Richard. He's not a big goalie, and he's a great goalie for, you know, coming in a pinch, you know, and playing two or three games. But if Kerry Lehtinen, you know, ever got hurt for an extended period of time, I just needed somebody with a little bit more experience to be able to fill that position.
And Jim, you mentioned the acquisition of Sergei Gonchar, and of course you mentioned also the young players like Brendan Dillon, who's a really impressive young guy, and the big defenseman like Jamie Oleksiak. Was the primary reason behind Gonchar, you mentioned his veteran presence, but also the fact that he can help the defense move the puck out of the zone, obviously, to the forwards, and we've seen in kind of the new, quote-unquote, new NHL, though it's been years now, how important it is to just get the puck out of your own end?
No, you hit both things dead on. You know, first thing is, you know, he's a skilled defenseman. He moves the puck very well, and the other thing is he's going to really help our power play. He can control a power play, make the right plays, and you know, he does all the things right on the power play. And that's something they've lacked here, and so that's going to give us another weapon there. And then his veteran presence in the dressing room. He's a high end, classy guy, and you know, it's worked out well. We drafted Valery Nikushkin, and I know that they're actually from the same hometown, and I know he's going to be a guy that's really going to mentor him, so it's going to be good.
Jim, we'll let you go on this last question. You've obviously had a tremendously busy offseason so far. One of the other additions you made to the Dallas Stars was hiring Lindy Ruff as your head coach. What do you see Lindy Ruff's biggest strength as?
Well, you know, Lindy's been around a long time, and anytime somebody's been in an organization for 17 years straight, that says something that he's doing something right. And Lindy, you know, to be in Buffalo that long, and he's been through all this, you know, different scenarios. He's had a great team in Buffalo. He's had a team that went through bankruptcy, and he had to rebuild it. And he's coached through all those different situations. That's a huge thing to a franchise. And when we hired Lindy, you could just see it just changed the franchise as far as the credibility. Like, I know when the players come to training camp, they're going to know that, hey, Lindy Ruff's in charge. Here's how we're going to do it. And he's going to give them direction to win. And that's all players really want. So that was a huge, huge signing for this franchise.
Dallas Stars General Manager Jim Nill, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, you take care. Bye-bye.
Take care, Jim. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Big thank you to Dallas Stars General Manager Jim Nill. In case you missed any of that interview, we will have it available for you both on IllegalCurve.com and on tsn1290.ca. Talking about the Jets roster after some of the moves they've made in free agency, we want to hear from you. @IllegalCurve, we'll read your tweets if we want to. How about that?
I want to get to something in a second, but I just want to say it's good to be back. You know, we were at the draft, you were at the Shark Club,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't get a chance because Remus didn't have our chairs and microphones ready to go.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, it's good to be back here. We got the Timbits, where the four of us are back in the studio. It's like, you know, nothing's happened. But, alas, we need to hear from Michael Remus. He's on six different shows on the station.
It's true.
People want to hear Michael Remus all the time.
No one wants to hear from you guys.
We do right now, Remus.
Yeah, why don't you read some of the tweets we got so far on our Twitter feed, at Illegal
Curve. Okay. Okay, guys, well, we're talking about the Jets roster, and we got a tweet from T-Bird204. He's got a criticism for you guys. You assume Jones can play full-time in Nashville, but Trouba cannot for the Jets?
Here, hold on, and I'll comment on that, and then you go to the next one.
Jones is way overhyped. Trouba can play.
Well, I don't think Jones is overhyped. Trouba can play. The problem, of course, is that in Winnipeg, you have Bogosian and Bufflin ahead of him on the depth chart. So unless you're putting Bogosian and Bufflin, either of them, specifically Bufflin, on your third pairing, have fun with him pouting on the bench the whole time, then you're not playing Trouba in the top four. So you're playing, we said Trouba very likely could start on the team, but as a right side sixth or fifth defenseman.
And furthermore, Seth Jones is going to have growing pains.
For sure.
He's not going to come into the league and score 60 points and be the Norris winner next year. I think we would all agree that, you know, Seth Jones has a better chance at playing more games in Nashville next year. We're not saying, for that fan, I forget his name, we're not saying that Jacob Trouba won't play for the Jets next year. We're saying that don't expect him not to have some growing pains, right, and possibly sit in the press box and maybe even play in the AHL. That's it.
I agree with that comment exactly, Ezzy. Let me ask you guys this. I mean, you look at this roster and you look at some of the free agents that are still out there. What do you want to see? I mean, if the Jets went into training camp with this roster, the way assuming they re-sign their RFAs. So let's assume, including Burmistrov, let's assume they re-sign all the RFAs that they want to re-sign. Are you happy with that roster, or do you still think that they need to do more?
To make the playoffs?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, that's the goal, is to make the playoffs. So, yeah, initial goal.
I still do think they need to do more if they want to make the playoffs. I mean, not saying they can't make the playoffs with this team, but it's certainly no shoo-in. And then, you're on the fringe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Periphery. So, you're not better than Chicago or St. Louis. And then you're talking about the next other teams, right? Colorado's got a lot better. Dallas, we just had Jim Nolan. He's gotten a lot better. Dallas has gotten a lot better. Nashville, I think, has gotten better. So, I mean, is there another team that I'm missing?
Colorado.
I said Colorado. So There's one other team.
Well, we know that St. Louis.
Sorry, Minnesota. Minnesota's better than the Jets right now, too, I think. So the question is, are you better than two of those bottom teams we mentioned, those four? And if not, then you're crossing over. And the crossover, San Jose, L.A., Vancouver, right there, you're not better than any of those teams. So then you're better than Edmonton, who's going to be considerably improved. What about Anaheim, who was second ranked this year? So if you're looking at it from a playoff, Phoenix, if you're looking at it from a playoff perspective, that is a daunting task.
There are a lot of question marks. And if we're, going under the assumption that the only moves that are coming are the re-signing of RFAs, and as the roster is currently constructed, you're going to need a better season from Jokinen. You're going to need good production from Setoguchi. You're going to need Frolik to not only be a penalty killer, but he's going to have to contribute on the third line. You can't just have one or two good lines. You, as Boston and Chicago have proven, the better teams are the teams that have four good lines. You're talking about a guy like Danny Pailler on the Boston Bruins. You got to have all the lines going. And you have to expect that if the Jets are going to have a lot of success, then Trouba is going to have to probably play a bigger role, because they're going to pencil him as a guy that's probably going to play over half of the games. They have to stay healthy. Bufflin's going to have to improve his conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have to be better defensively. So there are a lot of what ifs.
Ladd has to keep up his play.
Exactly. And the first line carried this team last year, and that's why if you look at the second line, you have to hope that Kane maybe pops in 40 goals. You have to hope that Scheifele works on that line with Setoguchi. So a lot of things are going to have to happen for the Jets to make the playoffs. It's not going to be easy.
Let me ask you guys this question. You look at this roster, and, I mean, there's a lot of talk about some of the, now that the frenzy of yesterday is now past us, and you can sort of maybe take a step back and you can sort of calm down, and you can actually see what's still out there, in terms of players that are available via free agency. There's guys that are out there that can still help this team. Damien Brunner, out of Detroit. He's only 27 years old. Grabowski. Tell me why Grabowski doesn't fit with this roster.
No chance Grabowski plays here, but the fact that he got into that spat with Carlisle, and Carlisle is very close ties to Chipman.
And he doesn't, for the amount of money he will command, he's not worth it. And I agree. Grabowski caught... I know we're going to get into this later. Maybe one of us will jeer his comments. It was absolutely ridiculous. The way he went out in Toronto was completely classless.
Why is it classless?
I think it is. I think it's sour grapes.
Why? Yeah, it's classless. He spoke honestly. He didn't get along with the coach.
Yeah, man.
Why are we blaming the player? Why isn't Carlisle bear some of that responsibility?
That's why he was sitting.
Carlisle pushed him down the depth chart. I agree with that. And, you know, sometimes you get in a guy's doghouse, and especially Carlisle's, it's hard to get out. And we'll ask Michael Tracos of the National Post that. Yeah, one. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, you want to probably take the high road. I think people in the game already knew that, how he felt. But you talked about free agents, Drew. I mean, a guy like Mason Raymond who could add speed to the left side and help the third line. I mean, then you're talking a different kind of... The Jets don't get any production from their bottom six right now, right?
Right.
So the issue is even Slater. Slater slated, no pun intended, to play with James Wright and Peluso or Thorburn. Are those guys ever, you know... Is that going to create enough offense, even from a fourth line? Because you're playing against other teams who have some depth on those, you know, some talent on those lines. So, the priority is more so a defenseman right now. This team has a bunch of names on defense. I think we need to keep expressing that. Bogosian, Bufflin, Enstrom. I could give you names all day. This team cannot defend.
It's not the strength of this team.
They can't defend. There's holes. And Pavlik isn't that good. Pavlik isn't Pekka-Rinne, so he can hide the holes. He's not Henrik Lundqvist. He's just not. Is he absolutely awful? No, I'm not saying that at all. But he's more so average than great. And with the holes this team has on defense, it's very difficult to mask that because they can't score a ton. So, I mean, these are the facts.
So, these being the facts, as you've just laid them out, is this team just spinning their wheels? Have they spent the last 3 years spinning their wheels?
What do you mean by that? I need you to specify more.
Is this the same team, more or less, with some different players that we've seen for the last 2 years in the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, they're not spinning their wheels because I think they've drafted pretty well. So far, we think they've drafted pretty well.
I'm talking about the NHL level. I know that a couple years down the road, they're probably a better team. But right now, how much different is this team than the team
Andrew
that we
Ladd's
saw last year?
Taking a step forward. Blake Wheeler's taking a step forward. Ryan Little's been pretty solid. Vander Kane's improved with time, and that takes time.
Right.
Bogosian, I think, has taken a step forward. Enstrom probably was close to what he was before. Bufflin the same.
So they've made... I mean, some of the guys have improved, but have they improved dramatically? Do they have another step to improve to make this team a playoff team, or are they just sort of reshuffling... They have the core pieces, and the secondary pieces, are they just reshuffling the secondary pieces?
Well, somewhat they are. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you need a number one center. You need Scheifele to really turn out. You need a number one center. You need another guy in the top four. I mean, Trouba can be that guy based on what we gather.
Not this year.
Who knows? Who even knows? I mean, Hamilton played in the top four in Boston, so who knows?
Right.
Right? Although, as we said on the show, they're not going to trust him in the playoffs, which they didn't, and they played Torrey Krug over him even. But, I mean, has this team... This team essentially has been, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th, around there. I anticipate them, as they're currently constructed, being there again. So if you want to look at it in terms of perspective of standings at the end of each year...
Well, isn't that the only way to look at it?
Well, not if you're drafting well.
Sure.
Not tying up a huge amount of money in your salary cap. That leaves you some flexibility. Now the question is, do you use that, and are you able to use that?
You know, unless they do something to their third line right now, is this a NHL? Is this a top? Do they have a first line, a second line, and two fourth lines?
First line, second line, and two fourth lines. Right now, that really depends on Jokinen and Scheifele. But yeah, you're probably they're more of that than something else. Yeah.
So it's pretty similar to what we saw last year and what we saw in the first year.
I can't necessarily debate that.
I'm just saying, it just seems like, I mean, they're making some moves, and I like the Setoguchi move. It just, you know, we were just talking about it off air. Look how bold and how quickly Jim Neal reshaped the Dallas Stars. You know, and I understand not mortgaging the future, and I'm not saying that they should have gone out and signed Ryan Clough or David Clarkson to those ridiculous contracts. Those contracts are ridiculous. I agree wholeheartedly. And I don't think that was the right decision. But at some point in time, you sort of have to be bold at some point in time, don't you? Or you're just, is this mediocrity what you're going to get?
Well, it really, to me, that you're relying a lot on the draft, and that's fine so long as the draft turns out. The problem is, by all accounts, their drafting has been pretty good. The worry for a team like Winnipeg is if a couple of the draft picks flame out, then where are you? That's where your concern is. Because if you can stock the cupboard with talent, then you can make moves like this. You can trade prospects.
You can trade Jacob Silverberg for Bobby Ryan.
You can trade Joe Morrow and guys like that, for sure. You can do that. But when you don't have much in the cupboard, that's just my only concern about, trading draft picks at this time for this team. What's the end game? What does it get you to? So if you trade a second, it's just a second. Sure, percentages of him making it, blah, 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 blah. But instead of Gucci getting in the playoffs, and if not, then you're giving up 38, 36, 35th pick. And you're not improved enough to get into the playoffs. That's the concern I have there. If that's what I'm trying to express before.
Ezzy?
Well, it's a very difficult situation, right? You have Jets fans out there that they want their team to be in the playoffs. I think we all, we're covering the team. Everybody wants the Jets to be back in the playoffs. So it'll be great for the city. And I think, I do like some of the moves Chevy has made. I don't like some of the moves Chevy has made. Looking back on it a year later, I don't like the Jokinen trade at the time I did. And that's because Jokinen was disappointing. At the time, I thought it would fill the center ice position. And you have to think he'll be better next year because he can't get any worse, right? I think we'd all agree that, he had one of his worst years as a pro. But as far as the long term, I do think the long term picture looks good. Richie mentioned, Evander Kane's taken a step forward. Ladd, Wheeler, Bogo. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys, that's the positive. And the secondary players that have come in this year, I'm a lot, put it this way, Drew, I'm a lot more optimistic about a Stanley Cup winner and Frolik, who was a significant contributor to the Chicago Blackhawks. It's not like he was just like a guy that played 5 minutes a game. He was a penalty killer and put in 10 points. Or a guy like Setoguchi, who will help out the second line. I like those moves, especially considering those guys are in their mid to late 20s and can be re-signed. So I'm a little bit more optimistic. Mm-hmm. Now, Richie touched on it, and that's the key. Is Morrissey going to be a top four defenseman? Is Trouba going to turn out to be a number one defenseman, mm-hmm, or a number two defenseman with Bogo? I mean, the way he's played in junior and at the University of Michigan, him and Bogo could be two pretty good defensemen. You throw Morrissey in there. Yeah. So I'm looking at it on the glass half full side. But as far as this year, and it's frustrating because people look at it and they say, well, why didn't the Jets go out and get Bobby Ryan, trade Burmistrov and a first-round pick and another prospect? Well, the Jets don't have that deep of a system Ottawa. So we're not going to get a Bobby Ryan. We're not going to get a Ryan Getzlaf. We're not going to get, so I think everybody's wanting that. But the Jets have preached long-term developing through the draft. And we're going to see if that ultimately is a success 2 years from now as opposed to right now. Because that's the plan. It was never a two-year plan. It's a five-year plan.
And just reiterating a little more what I was talking about before, the Jets fans are ecstatic about Nick Batan. I agree because I think there's something to be ecstatic about. Presents really well in person.
Yep.
He is confident.
All offense.
I want to see
WHL in scoring. What's not to like about that?
I want to see what he can do without Leipzig and without Ratty, but for all accounts, it's a great step, something to be really excited about. My concern is, it's lots of moving parts here, but say you don't have that pick next year, and you don't have a Nick Patan to be excited about, and does Setoguchi get you to the point where you make the playoffs? And if not, you don't have. So,
I know. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, Michael Trakos of the National Post on TSN 1290. 1 hour down. 2 hours to go here with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the National Post, Michael Trakos. Michael, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Guys, how's it been? I think last time I talked to you guys were stumbling around in Manhattan. Ezra was lost in Greenwich Village.
I think Ezra, this is actually just
alive, right?
No, this is an imposter, Ezra. I think the real Ezra is still stuck somewhere in Soho, if I'm not
mistaken.
He's
in a sack in the river.
Yeah. Michael, we ran into you in Newark at the draft, and you looked at me and you said, "How are you awake right now?" And said, "You were." I had me and Hustler shut down Brooklyn that night. It was a good time.
Yeah, you guys represented Winnipeg well. I think people in Manhattan are like, geez, I got to go down to Winnipeg now and really go to a party city because, you guys represented and well done. Obviously, Hustler is going to be the man there, but, you guys brought it.
Yeah,
brought it more than I did, for sure.
Huss is the big leagues. I think these guys are just AAA trying to work their way up there.
Yeah, it was a fun weekend. Not as fun as all the activity yesterday, but in terms of, we should have had a free agency period probably based in Manhattan versus just satellite cities across North America. But what do you guys want to talk about today?
Well,
surprise, right?
Yeah, exactly. We got to start with the trade that happened while you guys were all in Manhattan, or you were in Newark, New Jersey at the draft. The Leafs acquiring Dave Boland for that price. Is that just a no-brainer for the Leafs organization?
Oh, for sure. A total salary dump by Chicago, so Toronto benefits that way. Just in the same way that Winnipeg benefited in getting another Chicago cast-off. But, Dave Boland is exactly what the Leafs were looking for this summer, and it's going to continue. It continued, obviously, in signing David Clarkson. But, Dave Boland is that Randy Carlyle-type player. He's probably going to center the third line now that Mikhail Grabowski's gone. And, he's the kind of guy that obviously is not going to put up spectacular points, but it's those intangibles that the Leafs love, and it's the intangibles that the stats guys probably hate because they don't think those are anything that you can actually put value on. But if you're giving up, two second-rounders and a fourth-rounder for this guy, that's a no-brainer in my mind.
Michael, you mentioned Randy Carlyle. Can you give us both perspectives of the Grabowski-Carlyle relationship?
You know, it's kind of funny because I didn't think there was necessarily a bad relationship in the sense that these guys weren't talking to each other or really had any animosity towards each other. I think it was as simple as Randy Carlyle didn't know how to use Mikhail Grabowski properly, didn't have a spot for him on the team, and was trying to put him into a third line shutdown kind of role. And Grabowski obviously didn't take to that. To his credit, Grabowski's credit, the guy was a total professional. He never complained. All he kept saying was, I'm going to try to do my best. If the coach thinks I'm going to succeed here, I'm going to do my best to succeed here. And you know what? He did play the role perfectly against Boston. He was a major factor in the fact that top line of Patrice Bergeron, Tyler Seguin, and Brad Marchand was pretty much held off the score sheet up until like game seven. So he did his part. But obviously, this was not a role that was going to work out in the future. And Dave Boland is probably better suited as your third line center versus Mikhail Grabowski, who's probably he should be a second line guy on most teams and provide the secondary scoring. So, what caught me off guard was the way that Mikhail left Toronto and his comment TSN Radio's Jonas Siegel. We're probably not what you should do when you leave a job. It's kind of like getting fired or quitting a job and telling off the entire workplace. Well, you know, that's fine and everything. I guess it makes you feel good at the time, but it's not how you're going to operate, especially in a hockey community where you're going to run into Randy Carlyle probably again somewhere. And it's just not well to do that.
Michael, we have to ask you about David Clarkson, and I'm a big fan of his, you know, going back to his time with the New Jersey Devils, 30-goal scorer last year. He started off strong, and then he fizzled out towards the second half of the shortened season. In your opinion, do you think the Leafs overpaid for Clarkson, or do you think that was fair market value for what he brings?
Yeah, it's tough to say they overpaid because there's reports out there that Edmonton was offering even more money. So the money doesn't bother me a whole lot as much as the term, and we asked Dave Notis about that, and he said the term was something that made him a bit uncomfortable, but there was no way he was getting David Clarkson for 5 years or even 6 years. He said that they just wouldn't have had him. So you have to do that kind of thing. And what struck me as kind of odd was the fact that he said, you know what, we're not thinking about year seven, right? We're thinking about year one, and we're hoping that, and we know year one he's going to be good. And which is, I guess that's how you're operating if you're a general manager, where your tenure is not going to be probably 7 years if you don't find success in return. But it's not to operate a hockey team in that regard where you're going, okay, well, let the next guy think about your seven. Right now we just want to win a cup, we want to contend. So, yeah, Dave Carson's 3 years are probably going to be a lot better than his last 4 years in that contract. And it's going to be one of those deals where either Carson's either bought out or is buried somewhere. But right now I think he brings exactly what we're kind of looking for this offseason. Again, secondary scoring. You'll probably play on a line with Nazem Kadri and Joffre Lupul. And, yeah, you look at the Toronto's top two lines now, and it's a great mix of skill and grit. And it's a deadly combination, and it's exactly what Randy Carlyle wanted going into the season. So, again, like the Bolin trade, this one's got its seal of approval.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Michael Trakos, who covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for the National Post. Michael, the other long contract that the Leafs signed was for Tyler Bozak. What were your thoughts on that deal?
You know what? I'm not one of those guys that doesn't like Tyler Bozak, so I like this deal. I think I was saying all along that if you can get him around $4 million a year, four times four, I thought was a perfect contract. He had to go 5 years. He had to go a little bit more than $4 million, but you know what? There wasn't a whole lot out there. You look at Mike Ribeiro, you look at Steven Weiss, and you look at Valtteri Filppula. Those guys got more money than Bozak, and I would put Bozak in that camp with those guys. So no question, if Tyler Bozak had have left Toronto and gone to another team, he would have been getting more money. So he, as Nona said, he left money on the table. And, you know, he doesn't put up spectacular points. He doesn't put up points as a number one center should, but he's found some chemistry with Filppula. So Filppula's successful playing with Bozak. And aside from just the point, like, he's your best centerman. He's, I think, top 10, top 15 in faceoff percentage. Plays on the penalty kill. He's defensively sound. So in my mind, it's a no-brainer bringing him back at that price.
Michael, Jonathan Bernier re-signed signed a two-year deal with the Leafs after acquiring him earlier the past couple weeks. Does the amount of money that they gave him, $2.9 a year, does that indicate, because that's more than James Reimer's making, does that indicate that he's going to be the number one netminder?
I still think it's going to be dependent on who plays better that night and who goes in as the season's number one. I don't think it's really going to make a huge difference. If Bernier can't get the job done, they're going to go right to Reimer and vice versa. So Carlisle said at the draft that it's a win and you're in kind of policy, and it's very similar to what he had in Anaheim when he had Brizgalov and Jonas Hiller fighting over the net. And it seemed to work there in terms of you're going to get good goaltending from either guy. And I think that's the challenge right now. You got two guys, and Reimer kind of proved that he can handle the number one job last year. Granted, it was a shortened year, and he was injured a bit of the time. But Bernier is another guy who's got the potential to do that. So two guys on the rise, two guys kind of learning, and they're going to be duking it out for the net, and you just hope that it doesn't turn nasty, and you got two guys who aren't talking to each other, and it really affects the kind of chemistry throughout the locker room.
Michael, one of the smaller moves that the Leafs made, in the sense that it was less of a cap hit but a big player, was re-signing Winnipegger Fraser McLaren to a two-year deal. They've got Colt Knorr coming back as well, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, as you know they were referred
yeah.
to. Does this mean that the Leafs are committed to icing another tough team next year?
Yeah, I think your fourth line is going to feature both Colton Moore and Fraser McLaren, and that's the way that Carlisle likes to coach. And it's hard to say that's not the right way, because Carlisle got the team into the playoffs by playing that style, and it's obvious that he would go back to that again versus having a fourth line that might play more of a shutdown or a kind of an energy line type, but. What it ultimately means is there's more pressure on your top three lines because they're going to get the bulk of the minutes and more responsibility in terms of scoring and playing defense. So I personally would rather see some more useful bodies on the fourth line. But, again, the players seem to like that setup, the other players on the team. They like having a Colt Knorr and a Fraser McLaren there. I guess they feel maybe comforted by it or whatever. But and Carlisle obviously likes to coach that way, so. I'm not totally surprised. It's just, like I said, it's going to put a lot more pressure on your first and second line, and especially your third line, in terms of providing a bulk of the offense.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Michael Trakos of the National Post. Michael, we've mentioned Randy Carlyle a number of times throughout this interview. And sometimes the head coach is just sort of coaches the players that the general manager acquires for him. In this case, it seems as though Carlyle is heavily involved in player personnel decisions. Is that correct, or is it just sort of happenstance that he ends up with this kind of team?
No, it very much feels like he's calling the shots here. And Dave Nonis even said it yesterday. He said, well, I got Randy the guys he wanted. Now it's up to him. And it makes sense, because why have a coach in there who's coaching a certain style and is having to force guys like Mikhail Grabowski and Clark MacArthur to play a style that they're not suited for? Why not get the guys that actually fit into that system? At the same time, Randy Carlyle is probably not going to be there for the duration of David Clarkson's contract. So it's a bit of a dangerous slope that you play, or a dangerous game that you play, when you say to the coach, you basically have carte blanche in terms of choosing your roster in that regard. But, yeah, again, it doesn't surprise me. Randy Carlyle has got a lot of experience. He's got a lot of respect in this league. He's won a championship with Anaheim. So if he goes to Dave Nonis and says, I need the kind of players that I won with in Anaheim, get me them. What's known as to say, no, I'm going to get you guys that I think you're going to work with, and it's just not going to be a good situation in that regard. And granted, Nonis inherited Carlyle. He didn't hire him outright. This is a Burke guy, but he's there. He's a guy that I think Nonis likes, and I think Nonis, as much as we're saying this is Carlyle's team, I think this is the kind of team that Nonis likes as well. I don't recall Vancouver being this tough, but when Brian Burke was the GM and Nonis was the assistant GM, they both were on the same page in terms of bringing in that toughness. So when you're saying that this is a Carlyle calling the shots, well, Nonis is fully in support of them as well.
Final question, Michael. Are the Leafs done?
I think so. They don't have a whole lot of money left after signing their restricted free agents, and they've got a lot of them in Nazem Kadri, Cody Franzen, and Carl Gunnarsson. They've just re-signed Bernier, but a lot of the money's going to go to those three guys, and there's not a whole lot you can do. They're going to have Morgan Rielly, the last year's first-round pick, challenge for a spot on defense, but aside from that, this is the team that's probably going to start the year.
Michael Trakos from the National Post, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and when you see us next, we promise to keep it a little bit more professional.
Anytime, guys. Have a good weekend, okay?
Take care, Michael. Thanks very much. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Everybody get up.
I was waiting for Remus to play the song. It was only a matter of time. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey. What song is this?
You've heard this song. Is this Farrell and T.I.? Is that who it is?
Farrell. You mean Pharrell?
That's correct. Robin Thicke with T.I. and Pharrell.
Farrell, Pharrell. You're, the fact I knew who that was, yeah, I should get some points for at least.
Remus,
sorry.
This is the number one hit song coming at you on CFRW TSN 1290.
Hey, Remus. Cut your own mic at this point in time.
No, I like that. Remus, I wanted to quickly bring up an issue. I was told, you didn't bring this up to us at all, I was told that in your baseball league, Softball league, excuse me. Slow pitch league, in fact.
Yeah.
You inadvertently broke the toe of a friend of ours, my cousin's dad, Sheldon Manuk. You broke his toe?
I made a catch in the outfield.
Hang on, that's news enough.
Yeah, which is news enough. It was my first put out of the season. And I threw the ball at him, and it wasn't a great throw, and it led on his toe and might have broken it.
Why didn't you tell us?
I didn't believe him.
Was it the big toe, or was it the one that goes all the way home?
I think it was his big toe.
Oh, the big toe. That's the key toe.
No, that's the leader of the toes.
Wow, so you broke his toe. How long is he on the DL?
I don't know. I'm on the DL too, so.
What happened?
I got this hand thing.
I don't even want to know what this hand thing is.
I don't know what it is. I fell playing hockey, I think, and nothing's broken, but there's some ligament.
Let me interrupt. You mentioned hockey. Salutations to you boys. Oh. The champions of whatever division hockey league you guys were playing in this summer. So, you know, Hardy mazel tov.
Well, Ezzy had a great performance this year.
Yeah. Well, Ezzy was on the long-term injured reserve all year. His cap hit did not count.
Didn't count, yeah. He had the Chris Pronger.
It's funny because
you actually paid to play in the league, but you didn't play any games.
We won the championship last year, and this year I had a herniated disc in my back, so I was on long-term injury reserve. I can relate to Chris Pronger.
Except, why did you pay? Chris Pronger hasn't paid the Flyers to not play.
In fact, he's gotten paid a lot of money by the Flyers to be on the long-term injury list, but I thought I might be able to play, but instead I've just taken up bike riding and tried to slowly get back into my hockey career. Maybe I'll be back next year.
What's up here, Drew?
I'm surprised I'm not kicked off the air, first of all, but we're going to talk Daniel Alfredsson and the moves that the Detroit Red Wings make. Uh-huh. First of all, how bizarre was this Alfredsson, Murray, Ottawa, the whole saga surrounding Daniel Alfredsson there? That was one of the more bizarre subplots of yesterday.
Nobody's really sure why it happened. And yesterday we had Dean Brown on. He seemed genuinely shocked. And then I was at dinner last night. There was a paper was sitting there, and there's in the snippets in the Free Press, it says, Brian Murray, well, I'm not really concerned. We're going to get this done. Just a matter of time kind of thing. Not in an arrogant manner, but in a matter of fact. Now Alfredsson just leaves and then says, hey, I left to go win a cup.
Is Detroit that closer to winning a cup than Ottawa is?
Detroit's closer to winning a cup than Ottawa is, Drew, but it's not like Ottawa's a bad team, especially now that they add in Bobby Ryan, which obviously they have more room now because Alfredsson didn't come back on a significant
dime. But if you listen to Brian Murray, he said he told Alfredsson that the Ryan deal was in the works.
Really?
Yeah.
Hear that.
He said that, I told Alfredsson that we might be getting Bobby Ryan.
And if you compare the two teams, and Drew, to your point, you compare the two teams, Detroit is the better team, but
it's not significant.
I mean, if you want to compare the teams right now, as Ottawa's defense, Detroit's good at puck moving defense. Ottawa's defense is really good though, and they want to replace Gonchar obviously, and then you have Spezza and Datsyuk and Zetterberg obviously. Then you get to the point of who do you compare Zetterberg to in France? But Bobby Ryan, Zetterberg. I mean, you're talking about two really talented players. You throw Alfredsson in the mix in Ottawa and the young players that they have. I mean, Detroit, I think, a better chance of winning the Cup, guys, and obviously Alfredsson going there gives them a better chance, so his subtraction, of course, his addition to Detroit. But I think Ottawa probably, Drew, is 2 years away, maybe, from really being that, that young guys taking that next step, and Detroit's win now with all their veterans. But I do agree with you, it's not a massive gap, and it's an interesting one, because if you really wanted that big chance, Ezzy, you wonder why you didn't go to, say, Boston.
Boston was interested.
Yeah.
We know that Boston was interested in Alfredsson. And I think what happened here was Alfredsson was a little bit sour. And everyone's saying it's not about the money. That Ottawa was prepared to give Alfredsson whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
I think $5.5 million for Daniel Alfredsson at this point in his career is a pretty nice contract for Daniel Alfredsson. I mean, the guy's got 1 or 2 years left in his career. He is not, he's a shadow of his former self. I mean, he can contribute, and he's going to go there and play with fellow Swedes Henrik Zetterberg or Johan Franzen, which was a huge deciding factor in him picking Detroit. He's going to play with fellow countrymen there in a good organization, talking about one of the classiest organizations in the NHL.
Yeah.
But you think about Bobby Ryan and Jason Spezza playing on that top line in Ottawa now? I really like that move. I know we're going to get to that move and other moves and give some of our winners and losers a free agency, but I think Ottawa is a better team now than Detroit is. You look at Erik Karlsson on the back end. They've got good goaltending there. Detroit is going to lose Filppula, probably lose Brunner. And, they surprised me by beating Anaheim in the first round, and they took Chicago to 7 games in the second round. But I have to think, this is just me personally talking. I think it was money, and I don't think the Ottawa Senators wanted to give him that much money. If it wasn't that, then something else happened. Daniel Alfredsson.
If you read what Brian Murray said, he said, that Melnyk said, here's a blank check.
Yeah. And Alfredsson said, it was about going to Detroit. It wasn't about Ottawa.
Can you?
So there's a
given his family situation, the fact is all his kids live in Ottawa.
Yeah.
His brother coaches their minor hockey team in Ottawa. He's been there for 15 years. Is this selfish on Daniel Alfredsson's part?
I wouldn't say it's selfish, Drew. If a guy goes to another team for the purposes of winning a Stanley Cup, I can't necessarily blame him because he can still contribute. is the cup has a, does the cup have a little bit different meaning? Like if Jerome McGinley wins a cup in Pittsburgh last year, is it different for me than him winning it against Tampa in 04? Yeah, a little bit. Is it different for me if Albertson wins next year than if he won against Anaheim in, I guess, 2006 it was, or 7, excuse me? I kind of feel like it's different because his role in the team is a little bit different. He's the guy. He was the man with Heatley and Spezza in that series, and he played great in that series, you know, compared to all the other guys on the Ottawa team. And, you know, again, the heart and soul of that 04 group. It does have a little bit of a different feeling, but at the same time, Calgary and Ottawa's different position than Calgary, but they both those players don't think they can win in those current situations. So,
Richie, I don't doubt that Daniel Alfredson chose Detroit to play with Zetterberg and Datsyuk and Franzen, as we mentioned, Franzen and Zetterberg being fellow countrymen. Mm-hmm. The way I look at it, I just don't think that Detroit is, you know, Stephen Weiss, good acquisition. I mean, yeah, that was a good acquisition, but I don't think that they're significantly better than Chicago or L.A. or even Vancouver. And some of the other teams have gotten better. And I look at it and I say, okay, so he obviously weighed his options. Stay in Ottawa. Finish your career. Finish your career at 19 or 20 years. The city where you've built up. They're talking about Daniel Alfredson is so popular that he could actually become a senator. I mean, that's how popular the guy is. He is the most popular Ottawa senator by far.
He was the franchise.
It's not even close. He's well-respected, and he's not going to lose respect for this. I hope he doesn't. He might with some people. I don't think that's fair. But I think he weighed his options, and he said, okay, I'm going to go to Detroit, and I think I have a better chance at winning in Detroit. So I'm going to choose not to finish my career in Ottawa. Like Richie said, they're a couple years away. I think Detroit's track record shows that they're probably a little bit closer.
Detroit's closer.
I'm going to take my shot. And if it doesn't work out, okay. I had a good career anyways, but I have never won a Stanley Cup. This is my best chance to do it. But I do think the money thing I can't disregard, because
I think there's more to this story, to be perfectly honest. I think there's something else that happened here that we don't know about yet. Because otherwise, it's not Ray Bourque leaving a terrible Boston team to go play in Colorado to win his cup.
This is a playoff team that he's leaving.
These are two, you know, this is a move. Maybe it's a little bit closer to a Stanley Cup winner, but the Red Wings certainly aren't a sure thing the next year.
They're really good. They're not a.
And it's not like Ottawa was a dog. I mean, Ottawa's going to be a playoff team.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a good top line. You put Zetterberg, Datsyuk, and Alfredson, and then your second line's like Weiss, Franzen, and whoever you want to put there.
Yeah, but look what Ottawa did last year with their injuries. Yeah, get them healthy again. Bobby Ryan, because he allegedly knew that Bobby Ryan was going to be there.
They've added Bobby Ryan. They've thrown in Clark MacArthur. They're going to be healthy. They're young.
There's a lot of things that just don't add up in my mind. And before we get to the Bobby Ryan deal, we'll do that after the commercial break, but let's talk about the Stephen Weiss acquisition first of all.
Based on the contracts that were handed out yesterday, I thought that was a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. I like Stephen Weiss's game. I don't love his game. I like his game. He's a really good he's a really solid second-line center, and that's what he's going to be playing in Detroit. He's playing behind Pavel Datsyuk, so he's no longer going up against the other team's best players. He gets to feast on the second-line guys. They signed him to under $5 million a year for 5 years. You compare that to Bozak. I know they're not the same age and such, I don't think, but they're both UFAs.
Yeah. Weiss is 30.
Yeah. So not the same age. Sure, fine. But, I mean, you're getting 30 to 35, not 35 through 40. Obviously, that's a significant difference. You're getting for under $5 million. You're paying him less than you're playing Valtteri Filppula, and he's a better player.
Yeah. So, and Stephen Weiss is from nearby Toronto, and he is basically going to allow them. Richie mentioned it earlier, but Zetterberg is now going to be able to play wing with Datsyuk, and that's what they want, and they can load up that top line, and that allows them to use him as a second-line center. But he only played, I think, 14 or 15 games last year. He had
17, but
there you go. It was close in the ballpark.
When he plays a full year, he's in and around a 55-60-point player.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. And that's exactly what they need.
And you get him for less than $5 million a year.
That's a good contract.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised that Ken Holland does good things in free agency.
Kenny Holland is the best GM in the National Hockey League.
A lot of teams wanted Weiss. He was one of those guys a lot of teams wanted.
Yep.
And I think his decision was ultimately pretty easy.
Think about the lines that Detroit could put out. You put out your third, you have your Gustav Nyquist and Thomas Tatar, their prospect, young guys. They have good guys in the system who are, at Grand Rapids, obviously making AHL final. You have Abdelkader, who came into his own last year, I thought, playing on the top line. They re-signed Drew Miller. Bertuzzi's like 84. Helm will be healthy next year. He's really he's a great skater, obviously, nearby St. Andrews. Simelson can slot in on that second line right wing side. So, I mean, and your defense is young and improving.
In the market for Danny Cleary. They're still trying to bat that one around.
And Jimmy Howard's proved it really turned into a nice goalie. So, I mean, that team has as good a chance as anybody next year to win the cup.
Just quickly, Thomas Tatar was a guy that's played in Grand Rapids, and he was really good in the playoffs. And that's one of the reasons why Ken Holland didn't want to sign Phil Pula for $5 million a year, because you have Tatar coming up, and he expects him to be a roster player next year.
Yeah, and Phil Pula's asking for way more money than he was worth, and Stevie Eiserman decided to pay him.
From Detroit's perspective, at no point I don't think they're going to look back and say, boy, we could really use Valtteri Phil Pula right now.
I would agree with that.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to look at the moves from Ottawa's perspective, Bobby Ryan, Clark MacArthur, everything else. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.